All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It must be nice to always believe you know better, to always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, January 20th. Coming up this hour, State Assembly Representative Lisa Subek explains how the Republican flat tax plan is a massive tax cut for the super wealthy, paid for by you and me and all the rest of us. We'll also look ahead to next week's State of the State address by Governor Tony Evers and talk about how Democrats are turning the tables on Republicans about the referendum process. Republicans are basically abusing the referendum process in order to basically tinker with voter turnout for what is supposed to be a nonpartisan state Supreme Court election. And Representative Subek and the other Democrats said, I'll see your fake referendum question and raise you a real one that has impact on lives in Wisconsin. We normally hear Mark Jacob at 7:30. He's off this week. He'll be back next week. But Dan Schumacher is going to join us early at 7:30, not just as our celebrity guest sportscaster, but also to talk about the musical legacy of David Crosby, who passed away at the age of 81. If you'd like to send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Or you can phone us at 844-967-2789, the usual studio line for most Civic Media radio shows. And then we also have a number for folks up north listening on Bull Falls Radio. I mean, anybody can use it, but if we're talking to folks in Amory or, you know, Hayward or wherever, and you're in the 715, why not give you a 715 number, 715-388-7155, to get you on the air to weigh in on any of the matters we've talked about today or in the past, like yesterday, the whole noodles in chili saga. And we will, again, talk a bit about we talked in the last hour about the economic development aspect about the abortion ban. And we talked about that yesterday. But let's bring things back to the healthcare line for a moment. This is a new report from the Gender Equity Policy Institute. It was first shared with Axios. And so the Axios story says, women in states with abortion bans are nearly three times more likely to die during pregnancy, childbirth, or soon after giving birth. Here's the problem in the U.S. We already have an embarrassingly, shockingly high maternal mortality rate among developed nations. It's shockingly high. For a nation that is supposed to be number one at so many things, one of the things we are so not good at is preventing women from dying in pregnancy, childbirth, and in that first year after childbirth compared to other countries. And what happens when you now put an abortion ban in place in some states and maybe across the nation someday, which makes women even less likely to get the health care they need?
Well, it's because the women's health care isn't what's important. It's the bill they get from the hospital that's important.
Apparently, you know, between that and the restrictions where there are just worse outcomes because anti-abortion states are less likely to enact other policies like paid parental leave, which have been shown to improve outcomes for new parents and babies. And we've talked about that with guests in the past, too, that paid family leave would make a huge difference because some of the women who are getting sick or dying are rushing back into work because otherwise they don't get paid. They're trying to put up with either their first or however many children that they've had at the same time. And adding that paid family leave would do so much to help reduce the maternal death rate. Let's see, the Gender Equity Policy Institute divided states into three groups: those that are supportive of abortion access, restrictive, or banned. And of course, in Wisconsin, there is a ban now. And then they compared the data outcomes between 2015 and 2021. 29 states during that period were in the banned and restrictive categories. 21 states in Washington, D.C. were in the supportive category. The report found that maternal mortality rates in states with bans was significantly higher, nearly two times higher than in supportive states. Maternal mortality weighed heaviest on women of color. Native American women's maternal mortality rates were 4.5 times higher than those of white women, and black women's rates were 2.6 times higher than the rate of white women. And we have talked about that as well, that again, in Wisconsin, the black maternal mortality rate is shamefully high. And the report also found that infants born in states with abortion bans were 30% more likely to die than those in supportive states. This is not going to be the end of annual reports that evaluate reproductive health in the U.S. This first study from the Institute was designed to establish a baseline to have ongoing assessment over the years as America works to restore the healthcare rights of women. But in short, says Natalie Vega Varela, senior researcher and lead author of the report, it answers a critical question. Before the constitutional right to abortion was stripped away by the Supreme Court, what was the state of reproductive and sexual health in the U.S.? And so now we have that baseline. And now, sadly, in states, and Wisconsin's going to be one of them, that is not a tough prediction to make, we're going to see things get worse for women. And that's going to have, as we've heard, an impact on everything from health to attracting and keeping healthcare for providers to keeping, retaining, attracting new businesses to the state. We'll talk about that and more with State Assembly Representative Lisa Subek coming up in our next segment. This is Up North News Radio. Seems appropriate that as we're remembering David Crosby and the music that he played, that this be an appropriate song to come in and talk about, you know, who's doing right by the children in Wisconsin and their public educations and their family lives. You see that through a state budget and other decisions that are made by people like State Assembly Representative Lisa Subek, a Madison Democrat, who also is the chair of the Assembly Democratic Caucus. Representative Subek, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is where I get a little special prerogative, not just as a host, but as a former legislator, that I think a lot of hosts would say, what does it mean that you're the caucus chair? I'm actually going to volunteer that answer, and then you can feel free to disagree with me. There's majority leaders and there's minority leaders, and you think of them as the head of the Democrats or the Republicans in the Assembly or the Senate. The caucus chair basically has to run the meetings when all of the Democrats and or all of the Republicans get in a room together. So when all the Assembly Dems get in a room together, you chair that meeting as caucus chair. And I say all that just to say that I think you have the most thankless job in the state capitol of trying to herd cats as a caucus chair for the state assembly.
Well, I am fortunate that we have a pretty good team in the Assembly Democrats. So as much as sometimes it feels like herding cats, it actually is not so bad because our team is very strong and works together very well. And, you know, I would argue that while not in the state capitol, the most thankless job in politics is probably our school board members.
Oh, without a doubt. And are still faced with the uncertainty of what this legislature will work out with Governor Evers. And so we're going to get into the state of the state and budget matters in a bit. But earlier I mentioned that the state health and or the U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra is going to be in Wisconsin making appearances today. He was in Minnesota previously. And in Minnesota, there have been some great contrasts. And the same can be said in Michigan with Democrats taking over the legislature there. Just to name a couple of them, Democrats in the Michigan legislature have codified LGBTQ rights, protected election workers, repealed union busting so-called right to work rules, and ensured union wages in construction. In Minnesota yesterday, with the HHS secretary's visit, they codified abortion rights into state law. And people want to say, well, you know, why are you sitting in Wisconsin trashing Wisconsin? We're not trashing Wisconsin. We love living here, but it means there's still a lot of work to do, Representative Subek. And, you know, you're in there trying to do it, but it's a long list.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Wisconsin has spent many years heading the wrong direction on abortion, as some of our neighbors, Minnesota and Illinois, have ensured that people who are facing unplanned or untenable pregnancies have places to turn. And really, it's an issue of our basic freedom. It's about the ability to make decisions about when and if you are going to have children, and to do that in consultation with your family and your physician and your faith without interference from politicians.
It's the kind of thing that is a real issue that frankly could and should come before voters. Governor Evers has suggested it. Republican Senator Ron Johnson even suggested it. And yet your Republican colleagues this week have been working on a referendum related to whether able-bodied childless adults should have to work for their benefits, when that's already on state law. You and I both know that that is solely there to gin up turnout in the state Supreme Court race. So tell folks about how you guys, in a way, just kind of turned the tables and said, oh, you want to use the referendum process? What did you guys all talk about this week?
Sure. So this week in both the Senate and the Assembly, we offered amendments to, or substitutes, as we call them in the legislature. So that's when you take a bill and you don't just amend a few words, but you replace it wholesale. We offered substitute amendments that would have put the issue of abortion on the ballot and would have asked voters simply, should we overturn our 1849, now remember that's pre-Civil War, criminal abortion ban, and restore Roe in Wisconsin, essentially. I mean, what we're looking to do is to restore the state of affairs here in Wisconsin to where it was before Roe was overturned. And, you know, as your listeners may know, Sunday is the, I guess, commemoration of Roe now. I'm not sure if it's still called an anniversary once it's been repealed. But so we offered an amendment that would just say to the voters, right, it wouldn't actually change anything at this point. We're still working to do that. But would simply say to the voters, you have a voice, tell us what you think. Should we overturn our 1849 law and restore the rights that we had under Roe here in the state of Wisconsin? And the Republicans wouldn't even hear the amendment. I mean, they voted to rule it, not germane, as they call it, which means basically they're afraid to even take it up. We made them vote on whether or not to take it up because they wanted to just rule it not germane and move on. But, you know, I think this speaks to how much Republicans don't want to be talking about this issue because they know they're in the wrong. And they know they are not on the side of public opinion on this.
No, they're not. There's long been broad bipartisan consensus among Wisconsinites that abortion rights should, in fact, be protected for women. Now, even though Republicans turned down your generous offer to put the 1849 ban up for referendum, I mean, we both know it is that is essentially still what's happening. There is a referendum on abortion rights in Wisconsin, but it's through the state Supreme Court election that's coming up. And again, for folks not familiar, the background really quick is that conservatives control the state Supreme Court 4-3. They have for a long time, but a conservative justice is retiring. And so if a progressive candidate were to win, then progressives would have 4-3 control over the state Supreme Court. And Representative Subek, what would that mean? It's not just for abortion rights. It would be a real difference maker in Wisconsin.
Sure, this election could be a game changer. If we had a fair Supreme Court, we could have fair maps for those district lines. And that's probably one of the biggest issues we have been talking about for the last 10 years. And we'll be talking about for another 10 years if we don't see a change in the Supreme Court. Because the reality is, well, I can't tell you how they would rule if another maps case was brought before them. A fair maps case has a fair shot. And what that would mean for the average person is, instead of a bunch of politicians drawing their district lines in a way in which they choose you, they choose who they want to represent, essentially rigging their elections for the foreseeable future, that would mean that you all would have the chance to really choose your own representatives, have the fairest elections possible, and have many differences. It could mean so much on so many other things. The reality is, every election cycle, I hear myself saying, this is the most important election of our lives, Pat. And I'm sure that you've heard it and maybe even said it yourself before. And people begin to think we don't mean it, but I got to tell you, the stakes keep getting higher. And in November, I talked about it as the most important election in our lives. Certainly, re-electing Governor Evers and making some good positive gains was really important. Now this one is even more important. The stakes really are even higher.
We are talking with Representative Lisa Subek, chair of the Assembly Democratic Caucus, about matters that have come up this week in the legislature, the state Supreme Court election, and things that are going to come up in the future. And that's where we're going to turn to the state budget and the budget surplus. And I'm going to be hearing this clip for the first time. I've simply seen it posted and, shall we say, mocked. This is Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss apparently describing some kind of a fantasy scenario where people win the lottery, become multimillionaires, and can remain on Medicaid, and that's why Republicans are like they are. Let's listen to Speaker Voss and try to decipher this.
Wisconsin has been a national leader in so many ways. Preliminary data shows that we have more people on Badger Care today than we did before the pandemic. Why? Because we don't even ask people what their income level is to qualify for free health insurance from the government. So on day one, you qualify. On day two, you win the lottery. You're a multimillionaire. You still get the benefits from the state. How is that right? It's not.
How is that a point? It's not. I mean, does he want real-time monitoring of your income?
I mean, show me the millionaire who's sitting on BadgerCare after winning the lottery. It's just not happening. I mean, this is the boogeyman scenario. We heard a lot from Speaker Voss at the beginning of the session about how he wanted a new era of bipartisanship, right? Mm-hmm. Everything was going to be kumbaya. And I remember hearing that session after session after session, but I kept getting asked by people. I'd go to meetings, go to interviews. People would say to me, what do you think of this new era of bipartisanship? Is this going to be a great opportunity? And I said, well, time will tell. It took, I don't know what, a couple of weeks before he turned his tables. I would venture to say new Voss, same as the old Voss, because this is exactly what we have seen from Robin Voss in the past. I am hopeful that we'll find some areas of common ground, but if you were shouting partisan rhetoric from the rooftops just weeks after you were making overtures about bipartisanship, it's hard to believe that, it seems a little disingenuous to me, and I hope maybe we'll see something different going forward. But, point blank, this is about, again, as you said, it's about an election, and it is about firing up their base. They love to tell boogeyman stories about, what people who are getting benefits are doing. The reality is I know those folks are hardworking individuals who are working hard in our cities and our communities, who are trying to get by. I worked with many of them prior to coming into the legislature when I worked in the homelessness system. And, the family I was working with were working hard and they were using BadgerCare because they just didn't make enough money to get by. And we should be doing real things to address poverty, not demonizing and punishing people because their wages are too low.
And that takes us to what, Governor Tony Evers will be proposing, things like that or other things in the State of the State address next Tuesday. And then he'll give more details in a budget address next month. But in terms of what you're going to hear in the State of the State, now we've already heard multiple speeches from him during his first term in office, but what kinds of things are you expecting to hear that would give you reason to believe, maybe this idea or that idea, at least part of it could get through the legislature and be implemented?
Sure. So, certainly we have heard from both Republicans and the governor about the importance of shared revenue. Obviously, we have to see what a plan looks like. I don't know that the Republicans will necessarily be at the same starting point, but I think that that is an area where there's some agreement that there's a need, and something that that Democrats have been calling for years, and it's good to see our Republican colleagues come along. I suspect, certainly hope we may hear the governor talk a little bit about that. I think we know a little bit from his plan for the surplus that he has put out, a little bit of what we might expect to hear. He has put forward a plan for a 10% middle class tax cut targeted toward working families. Completely differs from what the Republicans want to do, which is big cuts for people at the top, a pittance for people, down the road a little bit here to the average family. The governor wants to do a 10% tax cut for the average Wisconsin family. restoring the homestead tax, repealing our mandatory minimum markup on motor fuel. I could go on and on. But more importantly, I think that the governor is going to be talking about our values, ensuring that every child has a great education, ensuring that everybody has access to health care, and ensuring the security of all of us here in Wisconsin.
It's so important. And again, hopefully Republicans before June 30th can pass a budget that shows they share at least some of those values. Representative Lisa Subek, thank you so much for being with us today. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Coming up next, UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher will talk about sports and the passing of David Crosby after this. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I tend to think I know enough about my rock history. I'm enough of a geezer to understand things, but every so often I need to be reminded of something, and with the passing of David Crosby, it was that he was part of the Birds before there was Crosby, Stills, Nash. Now, Dan Schumacher normally joins us about 7:50 on Fridays, and we typically talk about sports, but as he and I were sitting at a local watering hole last night, he had a lot of thoughts about the passing of David Crosby and his position, you know, in the front row of rock and roll history. And with Mark Jacob unavailable this week, we'll talk to him next week. We thought Dan and I would talk a little about music. Anybody who knows Dan knows him as perhaps Wisconsin's number one Grateful Dead fan. But that just means that he's also, you know, adjacent to so much more of rock history. And Dan, good morning. I asked if you'd ever seen David Crosby in concert. And of course, you said at a Dead show.
It was. And, you know, before we went on air, the other thought is that I've seen so many great musicians that opened up for the Grateful Dead, from everyone from Steve Winwood and Traffic to Sting to the Indigo Girls, you name it. Through the 80s, those summer tours always had an opening band, and that opening band was a big mainliner, you know? And one of the things I saw, the only time I ever saw David Crosby was in 89. And again, it was in Eugene, Oregon at the Gorge, outdoor amphitheater. And he came on stage and played a couple songs with the Grateful Dead, which was a very common thing that either the opening act people would come on for a song or two, or the Dead would cover one of those songs, or there was just guests. You know, we talked about Eau Claire last night. We talked about Justin Vernon. Justin Vernon was a guest in summer of 16 down at Alpine Valley with Dead & Company because he was friends with John Mayer. So you get those surprises at those concerts, and I was fortunate enough to see David. And I follow him on Twitter. I have for the last 5 years. Facebook. He just put out a new album that came out about a month ago. So I know he's featured with some of his best musician friends on CNN this morning. So he was a special guy, man. He's like you said, he's in the front row. He's sitting right in the front row with the best of them.
I appreciated what Matt Schudell wrote in the Washington Post saying this about him. At a time when Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, The Doors, and the Rolling Stones were taking rock in an amplified, acid-washed direction, Crosby and his bandmates turned to a gentler sound inspired by folk music with acoustic guitars and intricate vocal harmonies. Every word could be clearly understood. Every bit of that is true, that you could. We always talk about what is rock and roll. We do this every year with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's incredibly broad. And you absolutely count David Crosby, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and everything there. Everything that was folk rock influenced, you count that as equally as any other hard rock and band out there in terms of the craftsmanship of the writing and the music.
Yeah. And you put those three voices together, they were harmony, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And I'm telling you, I think the most remarkable story about his talent is that the band members just formed Crosby, Stills, and Nash. He had left the Birds, and it was the summer of 68, and he got together with Crosby and Stills and stayed on Mickey's ranch, one of the Grateful Dead's drummer, and they put this group together, and the first time they ever performed was Woodstock. They had never, the Crosby, Stills, and Nash, I mean, you're talking about the biggest stage ever. And David talked about it, because we were so nervous, but we could have backed out of it because we were so raw. But he's like, no. And that those versions of those songs are epic at Woodstock for the first time playing in public as a group. So,
well, you've got that youth that doesn't think, you know, I can't do it wrong. You know, this is, you've got the confidence to go forward and just let it all hang out, as it were. And what they did at the time, the Washington Post article quotes music journalist Paul Evans from the Rolling Stone album guide. And I'm going to precede this by saying, I don't know that there's any writers I appreciate more than music writers, because how do I describe somebody's voice? I would just say high or low, alto or bass. And they're so much more descriptive than I am. And so Evans writes that CSN captured the spirit of the last high moments of the American 60s. The CSN generation found in the band both spokesmen and representatives. The singers' slightly weary utopianism, their bucolic fantasies, and their songs about love and losses reflected in the inward turning of an aging youth culture.
Yeah.
Again, I always come back to the writing. Great music is great music, but I always want to know that there's some good lyrics behind it, not just, you know, she loves you, yeah. I'm looking for a little more than that. And you definitely found that with Crosby, Stills, and Nash writing and performing together.
I don't know. I never caught the age he was when he just passed away.
81.
I knew it was in the 80s. You know, about 15 years ago, he had his son donated his kidney to his dad to save him. So David's been on one kidney for about 15 years. I don't know if it was his son, that or another brother or relatives for a match. So he's had his health issues too, and he's been a survivor. And to come out, like I said, he just came out with a new album, solo album. You know, he was also a big activist. I mean, he was opinionated. You know, Pat, he got involved with politics. He got involved with the he had, if you look at his Twitter account over the years, he was never afraid not to say his mind, what he thought of the current state of democracy and things like that. And he was a smart guy. He wasn't just some stupid rock and roll kid, you know.
I was going to read a bit about his drug abuse and his raucous upbringing and everything. I wouldn't even know where to start. There is so much of it listed in this article, because he's been very upfront about it, about the difficulties that took him to where he is. So I would just refer people either to the Washington Post or many of the other articles that are being written about him, and rightfully so, being the legend that he was. You talked about seeing him at a Grateful Dead show, and I'm sure I've asked you once or twice, how many shows have you been to?
Well, it's
I'm sorry. Let me restate the question for the witness. How many shows do you remember going to?
I remember every one of them. I was a big geek that I kept most of my ticket stubs, and I would write the song lists. I always had a small pencil or whatever, and I would write the songs on the back of the ticket. So just to keep the set list. But my first show was not a Grateful Dead show. It was a Jerry Garcia Band show in 1983 at a place on the northwest suburbs of Chicago called Poplar Creek. Mm-hmm. And I went to that concert with a couple other youngsters of my age, and we got hooked. And then we started going to Grateful Dead concerts. And I probably, what I call is before Jerry or after Jerry. That's 1995, Jerry died. So I probably seen over 220, 230 shows when he was alive, and I've probably seen another 200 with the different iterations of the band. So I plan on going to Wrigley Field this summer. I'm taking my adult children and their significant others and doing a weekend down in Chicago and see them at Wrigley Field and make it a family event, as my kids were born and raised on it. So they know all the songs, and they're looking forward to they've been on the bus before. So, but this will be a good family trip this summer.
So we talked in the last hour about it being the anniversary from 1977 of a Jimmy Buffett album coming out, Changes in Attitude, Changes in Attitude. Now, I can explain my, you know, love for Jimmy Buffett music the way anybody could. You talk about, you know, being on an island, being on a beach, the feeling that it takes you to, the carefree life that Jimmy wants to lead for himself and for others. So when people who are complete strangers to the Grateful Dead say, what makes you go to hundreds of shows, what's the equivalent answer that you give them? What is it that the band does for you?
It's not much different, Pat, than you just said. I mean, it's my favorite place to go to as a crowd, as a community to go. There's no judging. There's no, everybody's happy. Everybody's polite. Everybody's there for the music. They're there to have a great vibe about life. And it's no different than what Jimmy Buffett tries to portray, for people to take a step back. And I just love the vibe when I walk out into a stadium or I'm around pregame shows, Shakedown Street. If people don't know what Shakedown Street is, it's a famous song from 1978. They called it Disco Dead back in that day. But it wasn't, it's about a street mall. And you could buy anything you want. So at a Grateful Dead concert, you usually see people, vendors everywhere, selling t-shirts and hot dogs or cans of pop or jewelry or whatever. So it's the whole presentation of it that I think that's why that the community is still strong, it's still around, and still supports the band, all because of that feel.
The band has been fronted in part by John Mayer for I don't know how many years now. And when that first happened, of course, you know, John Mayer was seen as a teen idol isn't the right word, but he was still a very, you know, young man, you know, known for his little brief relationship with, you know, Taylor Swift. He had a couple of pop hits. And I'm certainly one of those that said, well, this is a passing fancy. They're basically using, you know, John Mayer for his name, for his celebrity. And yet here he is all this time later. He's part of it.
He is, you know, in what you said right there in the beginning, Pat, was probably what 95% of the people thought. But he started playing right after the 50th anniversary of the Dead out at Soldier Field, called Fairly Well. That fall of 15 is when they originated called Dead and Company, which is the leftover members, John Mayer. Everyone thought that you'd see a bunch of teenage girls at Grateful Dead concerts now because of him. That never happened, Pat. It didn't. I really thought that, and I think they thought that they could suck in a younger crowd to get into the music, to perpetuate the music, to perpetuate the almighty dollar. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to kid anybody. I mean, it's about money. There's money there. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. He didn't bring that teen crowd, that pop crowd, that teeny, you know, the girl pop idol. So, you know, as he comes on, he became more and more accepted by the community. The Dead really let them have some range too. In fact, this is their last summer tour due to real retirements. The guys are all in their 80s. He commissioned to have a duplicate made so he would play every concert in Jerry's old original guitar called, you know, the Tiger. And so the guitar he's made is made by the two guys that made Jerry's guitar back in 1967. So John has taken it to a new level of being involved with the community and getting to know why the Dead are the Dead and why do they have these people keep coming to concerts, no matter what the reiteration is.
I just find it interesting in that it's a case where I don't want to say replace a change in personnel worked, you know, whereas other times people are, it's like, why are you still calling yourselves, you know, Journey? Because Steve Perry isn't there anymore. And look, Steve Perry wasn't an original member of Journey, but once he left, you got somebody that sounded like him, but are you still really Journey? Yeah. And, you know, the same gets said for a lot of bands. And so, like I said, I was surprised. And I mean, weren't you surprised as well at first? Weren't you skeptical at first?
I was very skeptical. I think every Deadhead there was just like, oh man, this is about money. This is all about money. Mm-hmm. What are you doing, Bob Weir? What are you doing? You know, Billy Kreitzman and Mickey Hart but then as it evolved, it changed. And those people my original opinion and the others have faded away, as the song goes, not fade away. Mm-hmm. It didn't. It it was, I would love to see him continue to play, but I understand that John wants to get it back onto his solo career and things like that. So there's a lot.
Well, and now with all of this experience, you know, having been with the Dead, it'll be, I will be very curious to see what style he brings to the next chapter solo career that he does. In the 30 seconds we've got before a break, I just want to bring it back to David Crosby and the Birds. Again, I'm slightly too young for the Birds when their songs were new, but I still am going to stop and listen to, you know, To Everything, Turn, 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 and 8 Miles.
Mr. Tambourine Man, Mr. Tambourine. They do a great version of that.
They do, and they, I mean, so we talked about Crosby, Stills, Nash a lot, but we really have to give the Birds their due, and David Crosby was put in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice, once with each group. Dan Schumacher's with us. We'll switch gears and do a little sports coming up right after this. You're up north. Next two games are on the road. Saturday, tomorrow, they'll play at 6:30 in Cleveland. And then Monday evening, 6 o'clock our time in Detroit. We've got Dan Schumacher here, the athletic director for UW Eau Claire. We'll get into the Badger schedule, the NFL playoffs in a sec here. But since we've got a little extra time this week, we don't talk often enough about the WIAC, the Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, of which UW Eau Claire is a part of, along with Whitewater, Stevens Point, La Crosse, Oshkosh, Stout, Platteville. There, got them all in there.
There you go.
And this is the time of year where you basically, if it weren't winter, I'd say you'd have to have your roller skates on to get from one sport to another to try to watch everything just that the Blue Golds are doing.
Yeah, we had two basketball games and a hockey game Wednesday night. We were idle last night, but tonight we have men's hockey. Saturday we have home wrestling, home basketball, home swim, and then home hockey. So spreads us a little thin from a staff standpoint when we have so many home events at one time. But this next month is really the crunch time. It's the second half of the basketball season, second half of hockey in the WIAC. Playoffs start in end of February, beginning of March. And, you know, most of the school sports are going at this time. I think I have 13 out of my 25 are active right now for competition. So it's the busiest time of the year for the athletic directors around the league, no doubt.
Yep. Men's basketball looks like Oshkosh is atop the conference at 6-1, La Crosse 5-2, Whitewater, Eau Claire, Platteville, all 4-3. The thing I'm always impressed by is when I say, what's new, right off the top of your head, you rattle off national rankings for the Blue Golds or where they are in the conference. Yep. Like if I were to tell you right now for WIAC ice hockey, it's, you know, 0.6-0, Superior 5-2, you know, of course, you know, Eau Claire is 3-3, but I'm always impressed at how you have to have every one of those things off the top of your head. I can barely follow one school. I've got a son-in-law who works for the hockey team at Western Michigan. I can barely follow that. And you've got all the rest of that right off the top of your head.
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know if it's a learned behavior or it's just you, that's your, you know, that's your geeked out stuff that you're the geek on, you know what I mean? And so, all of our,
where are we for women's basketball? As I call up those standings, Eau Claire is atop there at 6-1, Stout 5-2.
Yeah. We're ranked in the top 10 in women's basketball in the country. Probably the number one team in the region that would help us host NCAA tournament if we continue on this path. So they're having a good run. Heck, men's basketball, they lost a tough one at Point on Saturday without two of our best players and lost at the buzzer. That would have been a nice win. That would have put us in there in contention in the WIAC to be in second place chasing somebody. So yeah, hockey's, I mean, it's just what I have to do because I get asked that, hey, how's the hockey team? Well, in fact, they're number 9 in the country. Or, you know.
I've looked. I would swear you had like a real-time like scoreboard, you know, but you just built a house. I've been in there. There is no scoreboard, so it's all in your head.
There's a lot of things in my head, Pat.
Yeah, I know. we learn a lot of them, and some of them we can tell on the radio. Badger men's basketball is at Northwestern at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. Now that takes us to the NFL, basically the Final Four in both conferences. Needless to say, we have nothing to talk about related to the Packers, the Bears, or even the Vikings. Were you surprised the Vikings went out?
Yes, I was. I didn't think they were a Super Bowl team. I thought they won a bunch of games really luckily, and they had some good things happen to them, which it's okay. And you'd rather haven't had good things happen than not. But, man, I can't believe the Packers lost. And I'm not a Packer fan.
Yeah.
Sorry, listeners. It's all Wisconsin probably. But I can't believe they lost. And I actually can't believe that the Vikings lost this past weekend either the way that they did.
Here's what
it was a crazy weekend. Look at what the Dolphin game and the Bills game, and it was crazy. There was
Last week's games were very thrilling and got us to where we are now. But here's what I can't believe we're doing again. We're doing the Will Aaron Rodgers comeback dance already, and I'm just like, stop.
He stepped in it though, Pat. He stepped in it a little bit. He's on that Pat McAfee show or whatever.
Yes,
he's reflecting on things. And he goes, yeah, you know, I'd like to come back and win another MVP. He never said Super Bowl. Yeah. So a lot of pundits and a lot of other pros, I heard Michael Strahan, I've heard Gronkowski. They're like, he's in it for the wrong reasons. If he's worried about winning another MVP, it should be about Super Bowls. So he stepped in it a little bit, you know. He's gone. I think he's gone, personally.
I think so, but I also thought last year, and I resent that we have to go through all of this again. So the games exactly, there's one AFC and one NFC on Saturday, and then again on Sunday. So let's go in date order. Tomorrow at 3:30, it's Jacksonville at Kansas City. Then the New York Giants at Philadelphia to play the Eagles at 7:15 tomorrow night. That's going to, you know, conference game. So that's going to be great. Yep. Then Sunday at 2:00, it's going to be Cincinnati at Buffalo. And then the Cowboys will play the 49ers in San Francisco at 5:30. So of all of those, what's our Super Bowl at this point?
I think who's Kansas City playing?
Kansas City is playing the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Man, I don't know. I think Kansas City's going to run away with that. I thought Jacksonville got away with one, too, last weekend. You know, how does a quarterback throw four interceptions in the beginning of the game but throw four touchdowns in the second half?
And the same way the Dallas kicker misses four extra points.
I can't believe that guy's still kicking.
He said he was perfect in practice. He's perfect in practice this week. I'm like, yeah, but he's still got the yips, you know?
That was amazing. I've never seen a kicker miss four extra points.
All right, so Kansas City on the AFC side. Who comes out on the NFC?
I actually think that the Dallas Cowboys will.
Really?
I do. I think they're rolling. They're hot. I think Dak is playing incredible. I think their receivers are strong. Their tight end is strong. I think their defense flies around. I think that Pierce, number 7 for the Cowboys, I think he's just he's unstoppable right now. Nobody can block him. I don't know. I don't know what the health is of the quarterback for the Eagles. I think Jalen Hurt has been hurt. And so I don't know. If you were to ask me a couple weeks ago, I would have said Philly. But watching Dallas the other day against Tampa, and granted, Tampa's not a great football team, but man, it's hard to go against them Cowboys.
Okay. So right now. And then the last one, because I get to have fun with this because, you know, this doesn't happen every year. So the lowly Chicago Bears have the first pick in the draft, I believe.
We're on the clock.
Yeah. Have you got your pick figured out already?
I take the defensive lineman from Georgia.
Okay.
The top righty. We need D-line people bad. We have no defense. It's the first time as a Bear fan I've ever seen this bad of a defense. We've always had offenses.
You always had what kind of offenses?
I'm sorry.
Our apologies to everybody.
Yep. I mean, I just get so, you know, you get your just as
you are clearly a Bears fan through and through. Getting as excited to watch.
It's unwatchable.
That's what I get for poking the bear. Dan Schumacher, have a great weekend. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. You too.
All right. Coming up Monday, State Senator Jeff Smith, also Dr. Kristen Lyerly. You can always follow me at Pat Kreitlow Up North on Facebook or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. That is it for us for today. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.